Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 16th of October 2011. My name's TRP Watson and this week I'm joined by Web Cowgirl and Rev Stan. We're going to start by talking about Office Party. This is done by the Pleasance Theatre in Islington, but I believe it's a site-specific work, is it not, Web Cowgirl?
It is... Well, it's not quite a promenade. It's a... Now, I wouldn't call it a site-specific work because it really could be done anywhere. I think it's a bit more along the lines of Tony and Tina's Wedding, where it's sort of a play that you're invited to take part in. So I think it's not so site-specific as that, and it's not promenade, it's interactive. But it, you know, definitely takes advantage of some of the different spaces that are available to them at the Pleasance, and they actually open up the building next door to it, which you transition between the buildings through the walkway. So it's an interactive work, like I said, Tony and Tina's Wedding. And you show up, get your tickets, check your bags, and even at the point where you're checking your bags, you're being interacted with by the people who are part of the play. So I had the lady from housekeeping greeting me, and you have to make a name tag, and you'll note that it's pretty easy to figure out who's real and who's a plant by who's got printed name tags and who's got handwritten ones. But I feel like the interaction, like it starts when you're at the table doing your name tag, because the different heads of the departments are there and they all greet you. And in my case, I had the woman from HR who's apparently a comedian give me a hard time about the red streak in my hair. And she said, "You'll have that out tomorrow, right?" And I said, "I had it when I hired you, so no." I had it when she hired me, anyway. And kind of at that point, it just started having that feel of a real office party with all the office politics going on. We were given a free drink in exchange for the coupon we got when we checked in, and stood around for about half an hour, and finally were divvied up into little groups that represented which department we were in, and given some pep talks about the different departments. I had somebody else there who was in the corporate social responsibility department, and I was in, I think it was marketing. And I was wondering if your experience of the night was going to be really different depending on what group you're in, but I think ultimately it's really pretty much the same. Because once they finish the pep talks, you move into the large hall, and then the actual sort of party starts. And it's the large hall at the Pleasance. They've got one side open for a bar, so you can't actually keep drinking all night long. And the head of marketing DJs, so there's quite a while there's dancing. And apparently at the very end of the evening, if you're having a great time, you can stand around and continue dancing. This, of course, I say strictly via rumor, because long before they got to the point where they said, "Hey, you guys can just keep drinking and dancing the rest of the night," I and two other women who had been a part of the group that I had gone with had already taken our bows, as it were, and run down the street to the tube. I think for me, part of the reason why this wasn't happening is it was sort of a joke for the event that the live entertainment that was being provided was really poor. I think the entertainers who were doing it were actually probably very good, and they were pretending to be people who were sort of bad performers, but in fact, I thought they were quite successful at performing not interesting art.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I have to say, this hasn't really appealed to me. This thing because I don't tend to like office parties that much. I'm not sure that they're really my thing. It helps I don't drink, and that really stops me from enjoying that sort of thing. So this doesn't. I mean, this doesn't sound all that appealing. And also, but it's also I'm always more interested in the mechanics of these plays where they're trying to. Usher you around, you know. It's all about the crowd, really controlling the crowd, getting you in the right place at the right time.
That's a promenade. For this, you are all in the space at the same time where all the truly interesting things happen. And they're very successful at getting us, at hurting us, because they have contests that we get to participate in. Such as a pass the balloon under the chin contest and a pie eating contest. And just as I was leaving, the fashion contest. You get to see some dynamics of the upper echelons of the company during all of these announcements and things that are taking place, because, you know, it's clear that the president of the company has got the hots for one of the women that works there, and she's not interested in him, and he keeps getting drunker and drunker throughout the night, and he'll walk around and say things to you like, boy, she's really hot. And I'm sure that the other people probably also had their own characters that they were playing. So I thought the interesting thing for the show is really like how the guys do the improv and stay on top of it. But there's sort of a ringer for the show in that there are actually some people who are supposedly audience members also who aren't. And this apparently started to come out just after I left during the fashion show. So things start to get a little bit wild then. According to my friends who stayed, they thought it got exciting enough that it actually justified the night, because the whole thing went basically completely psychotic. However, I'm sort of a very particular theater person, and an event that features, not very good performances and a lot of standing around and listening to music, that's just too much like reality for me. So I think that for people who don't go to theater a lot, that this might be a fun and different evening. But I say, it's a little bit too much like an office party for me. You might as well go ahead and get really liquored up, because you're not going to miss anything. And certainly you can duck out and go to the bathrooms at any time, which is, actually kind of nice. But all in all, I'm afraid I found office party boring.
Okay, I mean, as you say, that hasn't been the reaction of absolutely everybody, though, has it?
No. My friend that I took with me loved it. And then, of course, Ian Oddaby Clowns was ecstatic about it and thought it was fantastic. However, we have a track record of getting completely the opposite feelings. The thing is, I'm already an extrovert, and I think maybe this is better for people who are a little more introverted so that they can come out of their shell a little bit. But and my other friend who liked it enjoyed the way that people were actually buying into being on teams simply by getting badges that were different colors. And he thought it was interesting from a social dynamic that they were able to recreate that. But after three not very exciting entertainment things, I just thought if I'd actually spent money for this, I would have been pissed off.
Okay, we're now going to talk about Jerusalem, which has just reopened at the Apollo Theatre. This is Jez Butterworth's play, which opened at the Royal Court last year and had a run in the West End. It's a directed by Ian Rickson and has Mark Rylance giving a bravura performance as Johnny Rooster Byron. Now, Rev Stan, you managed to miss it last year, which is very bad of you. So what did you think about this?
I know, very bad. Well, I missed it at the Royal Court and then it transferred. I think I was just not sort of aware of it as much when it was at the Royal Court. And then it came onto the West End and everyone was going on and on about it. And I tried to get day seats on several occasions, but because it was so popular, it just, you had to start queuing in the early hours of the morning. As soon as it was announced that it was back, I was straight round to the box office ticket purchased. And the problem is with, I find sometimes when you've got something that's so overhyped, you think, is it going to be as good as everybody says? And I can say, yes, it is absolutely brilliant. I mean, I can imagine that it probably wouldn't appeal to everybody. The central character, Mark Rylance's character, Rooster, is a character that maybe not everybody would warm to. He's he lives in a caravan on the edge of a brand new estate. He deals drugs to the local teens who sort of gravitate towards him and sort of hang out with him around his caravan. He has loud parties, and it starts off with him getting an eviction notice. And it then sort of follows 24 hours sort of post getting the eviction notice and sort of the lead up to the actual eviction. But it's, I just thought it was brilliant. I think Mark Rylance is just absolutely breathtaking in it. It's, I've not seen him in anything else, so I can't compare his performance in this, but he's certainly on my list of actors that I would run to go and see in anything. I think it helps that it's very well observed. It's the script is crackling with wit. I think it's very funny. Rooster is a raconteur, tells these amazing stories, which I think is probably one of the reasons why the teenagers gravitate towards him. But underneath it all, there is sort of like an element of darkness to it. That there's sort of, you know, like there's a girl that's gone missing. There's an implication that her stepdad is abusing her. So there's sort of like dark undertones. This isn't just like a frothy sort of, you know, I'm a bit of a rogue. Come and have a few drinks with me. There's sort of all these dark undertones to it, which I think gives it depth. And the performances are, you know, all absolutely fantastic. There's quite a few of the actors that were in the original. And then obviously it went to Broadway and it's come back. There's a few new actors in there. Johnny Flynn, who's been in a couple of things at the Royal Court in the last sort of 9 to 12 months, has taken over one of the roles. And I just can't stop raving about it. I loved it, and I'm going to be trying to get day seats to see it again, I think, later in the run.
Well, I saw this back in back last year at the Royal Court, so this is very early on. So, and I was impressed by it. I thought I didn't rave about it as much as anybody else, but certainly Mark Rylance, who's an actor I've seen an awful lot, he's remarkable in the way he sort of transformed himself into this sort of wide boy, this country boy. He's actually one of the things that interested me is that although he's, you know, a petty drug dealer and possibly a bit of a thief and you know, very disruptive and very anarchic, he's actually essentially a good person. Mm. Which I always found rather interesting. I mean, we get the young girl who runs away, and we find out what's happened to her. And he's, you know, the certain aspects of him that are bad. I mean, he's got a dysfunctional. He's got a wife that he's not very good to, and things. But in some aspects of his life, he is good, and he is trying to look after these kids that he's gathered around him. Which I think is quite a good, you know, good thing about him.
Yes, there is a note of truth in his argument that if he wasn't sort of peddling drugs and alcohol to the teens, and they weren't hanging out around his caravan with him, they would be doing exactly the same thing elsewhere. So at least people know where they are, and, you know, he's sort of keeping an eye on them, which is a sort of perverse type of philosophy, but you can sort of see there is an element of truth in that.
Yeah, he's, I mean, the sort of the focus of mischief rather than the actual thing. I mean, there was quite a, I'm not sure how successful it was at the time, but there's quite a lot of the sort of very ancient English stuff, you know, Gog Magog, I think he talks about, and giants and that kind of stuff that he does. But that's really him just on flights of fancy rather than, you know, you believing it.
What I think what intrigues me is how what they changed about it when it was on Broadway, because it is so very, very English and so very a particular part of England that I'd love to know sort of what they changed for the American audiences, because I mean there's references and stuff in there that, you know, would go across over a lot of English audiences' head, because it is so very, very specific and to a particular part of the country. So yeah, I'd love to have seen it in New York to see sort of how they changed it.
Okay, we'll move on now to talk about The Killing of Sister George at the Arts Theatre. This is a play from 1964, I think, which was made into a film with many of the same cast, and has a rather notorious scene in it. The film does. A scene where they enhanced part of Susanna York using ice cubes. Or allegedly, anyway. And he wasn't very popular apparently with the playwright. He didn't like the sort of the sexing up of this. This is a play about a radio star who's probably a functional alcoholic, drinks a bit too much, but does actually get able to keep her job, but her popular character Sister George is about to be written out of the sort of soap she's done. It's a sort of an Archer's like soap, and she lives with a childlike young woman who's called Childie, and there is a hint, or very strong hint, that it is a lesbian relationship. What do you think about this, Rev Stan?
Well, I went into this knowing all I knew was it was about a radio actress who was about to get fired from her from the long running series. So, you know, her character was being written out. So that's, I went into it with that in my mind. The whole sort of relationship between George, as she's called, everybody calls her after her, the name of her character, played by Mira Sayal, and her flatmate, Childie or Alice, to give her a real name. I was completely perplexed by that to start with, and it took me a while to realise that there was sort of like a more than just a flat share relationship going on between them. But part of the thing that I think perplexed me is there was nothing in that relationship to suggest that they were together. And George is just completely horrible to Alice all the time, treats her like a doormat, and, you know, punishes her, makes her, she's very, Alice is very subservient and very submissive towards her, which I didn't understand. George does some awful things, like there's a minor misdemeanor. So George makes Alice eat the butt of her cigar as punishment. I mean, awful, awful stuff. And I must admit, the first half, if I hadn't have been with people after the first half, I probably wouldn't have come back for the second half. I think if you're going to have such a character, there has to be either something redeeming in them, or there has to be sort of an element of wit and humour about it. I mean, you can have horrible characters that are still sort of quite witty. I mean, you look at Butley, which was on sort of roughly the same period, again, sort of like undertones of a gay relationship, but there was something like there was an element of charm. He was at least amusing in what he was saying, whereas this character of George is just horrible and it's not funny. And after I had to actually look on the website, it does actually say that it's supposed to be a comedy. It gets slightly better at the beginning of the second half, when George is sort of very resigned to the fact that she's leaving the show. But then sort of towards the end, they throw in this sort of bit of backstory about Alice that just doesn't seem to go anywhere. I'm not quite sure why it's there. You never really get the relationship between the two explained. So it sort of left me thinking, well, if it's not funny, so that's not a reason for it to be there. It doesn't really explore lesbian relationship. There's no sort of social commentary about lesbianism at the time. So I was a bit sort of like flummoxed as to sort of what this was all about, other than this horrible woman stomping around like a bear with a permanent sore head, being horrible to pretty much everyone around her. There's a little bit of light relief in that Helen Nedra plays a neighbor who's like this Eastern European clairvoyant, and she's very sort of eccentric and stuff. So there's this nice little bit of light relief when she's on the stage. But that's about it, really. I really didn't like this, and I couldn't see what the point of it was, what it was trying to be.
Well, I think it is meant to be a comedy, and this is part of the problem. I mean, it has got quite a lot of criticism. Most people are saying that Meera Syal is not really right for it. I think I thought more that it's that the director didn't get the play. Mm. Because I know Meera Syal. I saw her earlier this year as Shirley Valentine, and she was extremely good as that. And she's a very good and versatile actress. And if you wanted her to play more like Beryl Reed, because Beryl Reed played the original, and it's almost written for that Beryl Reed character. And like you say, I also thought of Butley, where you need a character in order to get that working. You need a character who can be a bully, but is also very funny and charming. And she is meant to be, you know, that funny and charming, and you should get an idea of that manipulative relationship. But of course, they couldn't be too open about the lesbianism. This was, I think, 64, so as I think I said, and that's during, you know, the Lord Chamberlain would have stomped on anything and been very worried about overt. So perhaps they've, you know, that it was sort of either cut down or written specifically to avoid the Lord Chamberlain's wrath on that by making it overt. We should, of course, mention one very good person in this is Belinda Lang,
yes,
who was unrecognisable in a grey wig, and she's sort of kind of a producer come troubleshooter type of BBC person. It's very strange. You're not entirely sure what she does. She seems to be quietly running the BBC whilst pretending to be a sort of, it's kind of like an agony aunt at the same time. So she does her agony aunt broadcasts and then sort of runs the BBC as well. It's that kind of thing, which I've found rather odd. But yeah, I mean, it's, I just wondered if there's a lot of criticism in the press about people like her, about like Meera Syal and Elizabeth Cadwallader, who plays Childie. And I looked at it and I said, yeah, sure, they're not right, but I hope it's because the director got it wrong. And that's it's a pity, because there is something here. I mean, I really thought that there's something going on, and there could be a really good production of it somewhere.
It's interesting you mentioned director, because it's Iqbal Khan who did Broken Glass with Anthony Sher and Tara Fitzgerald, which was on at the Tricycle, and is on in the I think it's the Vaudeville now. And you know, he's obviously a very able director, because that is absolutely stunning, that play. But I think you're right, maybe he just didn't get the play, because I think maybe Meera needed a bit more light and shade to her performance, because she just stomps around the whole time, and she's very, very overtly masculine. And I just think there's no sort of softer side to her. So I think you're right. I think maybe it's the director's at fault here.
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing I have about this directors. There's always a slight worry when a director doesn't get a comedy. You know, often when they you can see a hint of this, where they put a little note in the program notes that says we're looking at the dark side of this comedy. And or they say words to that effect, and it usually rings alarm bells with me. I didn't hear any alarm bells on this, but yes, I did notice that the Wikipedia entry says that the author thought of it as a farce. And there's elements of that. This is one of the interesting things I found about Belinda Lang's performance, is I think she got it right, and she sort of got the play. She got the kind of almost the artificiality of it. It's not supposed to be realistic. You're not supposed to, you know, you think that this is a genuine thing. It has to have that kind of rather strange element, you know, those rather strange elements to it. I mean, apart from anything else, we have the clairvoyant character who's always right. Her predictions came true every single time, I believe. I don't know if you noticed that.
I did on some of them, but I don't think I was like paying that close attention to it by that point, really, because I think I was just, I'd thrown in the towel on the whole thing.
You can follow the As Yet Unnamed London Theatre Podcast at AYULTP on Twitter, the As Yet Unnamed London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook, and AYU-LondonTheatre.org on the web. Goodbye.